There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Alarmy, check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Here's a preview of our Little Alarms series, only on Patreon.
So here's my little alarm. I realized today I have not finished a book.
Oh,
front to back.
Preach.
Guess how long it's been.
How long?
8 years.
Eight years.
No way. I nailed it.
You nailed it.
Wow. I'm not surprised.
I haven't finished a book since, and I remember the name of the book too.
What was the last book you finished front to back?
And I'm talking about a physical book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cover to cover was Seven Eves, which was a book. What do you call that? Outer space? Sci-fi.
Times. You can't even say the term anymore. You haven't read a book in so long.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the U.S. women's national soccer team pay disparity. Here's what you need to know. In February 2022, U.S. soccer made a historic decision. From that point forward, both the men's and women's teams would receive equal pay and equal prize money, including at the World Cup. This followed a settlement that saw $24 million in back pay awarded to the U.S. women's national team. It was a seismic shift in women's sports, but it didn't just happen overnight. The battle began in 2016, when Megan Rapinoe, Becky Sauerbrunn, Hope Solo, Carly Lloyd, and Alex Morgan filed a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, accusing their employer of wage discrimination. The star players contended they earned as little as 40% of what the men's team were paid, despite having won the World Cup in 2015, their third World Cup title. They would go on to win again in 2019. The complaint with the EEOC didn't garner much attention or action, so the women set their sights internally. In 2017, they signed a new collective bargaining agreement, which got them some licensing and marketing rights. However, the new CBA still could not guarantee their pay would be equal to that of the men's team. The pay gap existed despite the incredible success and popularity of the women's team. In over 25 years of competition, they've won 4 World Cup titles, 4 Olympic gold medals, and they have never been ranked lower than 4th internationally. In 2019, their jerseys were the most purchased soccer jerseys in the world, and over 1.2 billion people tuned in to watch them win a World Cup title. The men's team, despite making over twice as much money, hasn't advanced past the quarterfinals since 1930. On March 8, 2019, the 28 women who made up the entire U.S. women's national team filed a gender discrimination lawsuit against their employer, the United States Soccer Federation. The following year, a federal judge dismissed the claims but allowed the allegations of discriminatory working conditions to continue. The two sides fought to strike a deal, and in 2022, such a deal was reached. U.S. Soccer became the first soccer federation in the world to adopt a policy of equal pay. It was an off-the-field victory that was almost as remarkable as their success on the field. Fun facts, aka death stats. The U.S. women's national team was founded in 1985, with their first game taking place that same year. The 2016 filing of the pay discrimination complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission was the first time in professional sports history that any athlete had filed such a discrimination complaint against a current employer. According to the settlement, U.S. Soccer will pay an additional $2 million into an account to benefit the U.S. women's national team players in their post-career goals and charitable efforts related to the women's and girls' soccer. Players will be able to apply for up to $50,000 from this fund. The legal back and forth and backlash in the filing caused former U.S. Soccer Federation President Carlos Cordeiro to resign in March of 2020. His resignation led former American midfielder Cindy Parlow Cohn to become the first female president in the federation's history. U.S. Soccer has committed to single game payments for most matches of $18,000 per player for games won, $24,000 per game for wins at certain major tournaments, and turning over 90% of the money it receives from FIFA for sending teams to the next 2 World Cups, cementing the status of the U.S. men and women as 2 of the highest paid national teams in the world. According to the Women's National Law Center, on average, women working full-time year-round are paid 83 cents for every dollar paid to men.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And our very special guests today are friend and documentary filmmaker Chrissy Dodson. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi.
And we have Jen Barnes, who's the owner of Rough and Tumble, a sports bar in Seattle that focuses on women's sports. Hi, Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you both on this show. I know both of you are almost like experts on this topic.
Yes, we're really double dipping for this, I think.
So this is like cheating. So you guys are just going to host this one, if that's cool.
Sweet, great. Great, we're done. Excellent.
Take it away.
Goodbye.
Now, Chrissy, you're working on developing more content in the women's sports space right now.
Yep.
You're essentially doing God's work.
That's right.
That's what I say.
And you pipe it into Jen's bar directly.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It's a that's cool. It's a good relationship right there.
That's good. Now, Jen, can you tell us a little bit more about your bar? I mean, it sounds so awesome. And I recommend all of our listeners who are in Seattle, go check it out.
Yeah, it is really awesome, if I do say so myself. it's in a really cool, fun, hip neighborhood in Seattle. It's kind of one of the food and, you know, music scene kind of bar hotspots, which is kind of fun. It's kind of bigger than most people imagine. So I always kind of chat about that a little bit. You know, we hold like 250 people pretty regularly, which is unusual for a sports bar, one, and two. Yeah, and two, it's I think it's just really cool to see that many people there watching women's sports pretty regularly. So yeah,
that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. You guys have to come visit.
Is this like the first of its kind? I mean, I don't hear a lot about
No, I get second place. There's the very first one, I know, the very first one opened down in Portland just a couple of months before me. And we were, the owner of that one and myself were coming up with our business plans and getting ready to execute at the same time. And we didn't even know each other, which I think it says so much about where the women's sports industry sector has come from and is going. So, yeah, so it's a lot of fun.
We're going to have to plan a trip to Seattle. I'm going to have to start watching sports in general.
Well, we'll start at Jen's bar. Go with you and we'll start together.
Okay. Okay.
It's called sports and there's balls and fields and courts. All you need to know.
That's about right.
Jen, did you say the name of your pub?
Oh, we didn't do that. That's kind of
rough and tumble.
Rough and tumble. Right? Rebecca mentioned it.
I said it.
We said it at
excellent. Great.
Yep. Rough and tumble pub in Seattle. We prioritize playing women's sports, but we actually play both. And even though we have to engineer equality right now, that's really the focus, is getting women's sports equal to where men's sports have been for a very long time.
Yes. And that's why we're here to talk. But before we do that, we have to start off the show by asking our guests, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night? And I'm going to just say, Jen, you go first.
Well, I'm laughing because I have had very little sleep. I'm actually currently in Cleveland and have just wrapped up the NCAA March Madness, Women's March Madness. And it has been 4 days of super intense, very exciting women's sports fandom, games, events. But as I mentioned to somebody here earlier, the bags under the eyes are what is alarming to me at this point.
Right. Yeah. And you know what's not good about that is staying up late, worrying about it is not helping the bags under the
eyes. No, it's not helping any better. Yeah. I mean, I think if you want me to be serious about it, if you want me to be serious about something that actually keeps me up at night, it's really that the women's sports industry is moving so quickly, and yet we have so much work to do to get to a place of equality between men's and women's sports, whether it's playtime, media time, writing. Who's asking questions in the media room after games? And of course, as we're going to talk about, money. Hey,
money.
So that keeps me up a little bit at night.
Chrissy, what's keeping you up at night?
Well, if I'm going to be real honest, it's the I'm up in Seattle, and it's the absolute lack of sunshine, even though it's April. But maybe I shouldn't be quite so alarmed because it's Seattle. But it is troubling. Aside from that, probably just piggyback kind of off what Jen was saying, is like I'm trying to get more and more in this space, and it's actually quite alarming how quickly things are changing, like literally this year. And I feel like I do the thing where you wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, I'll just look at Instagram for a minute. And then an hour goes by and I feel like I'm just scrolling through a feed of like, look at what's happening. And just feeling like I need to be, I have major FOMO with women's sports right now. That's probably it. Yeah.
Now, why do you feel like you have FOMO? You feel, because when you say things are happening so fast, I mean, I'm assuming there's movement, there's more interest, there's more coverage that's happening, and that is a step in the right direction. Obviously, we're not there yet, not even close. But what is it that is giving you FOMO at the moment? Is it just that you can't keep up with the amount?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, exactly. It's just me and my own personal, like, I want to be in the cool gang.
Mm. Oh, well, me too. Me too.
It's like I go and I see Jen. I'll let go and see Jen, and Jen's like, "Did you see this, this, and this?" And I'm like, "Nope."
Oh, yeah.
Not yet. Yeah, I did.
Hold on, let me check. Yeah, I did. Hold on, let me check. So let's talk about this because, you know, this is one of those topics that I was telling Chris because we were listening to another podcast about just the actual deals and how they broke down and how the court case happened. And it's one of those that really makes you want to cry. yeah. I don't know if that's just me personally, like that, in that, you know, being in the workplace, I think just in a woman in the workplace in general can relate to it in a very real way. And what they were able to accomplish was really inspiring. And also at the same time overwhelmed me because I was like, if that's what it's going to take, like, you know, it feels unsurmountable in a lot of ways. I know that that's the opposite of what we should be feeling. Like, you know, obviously you want to pick back up, you know, get yourself back up and keep the fight going. But, you know, what they had to go through just to get equality.
Right. The visibility that they had and the fight that they were still up against.
It's like, I'm not even close. Right. I'm not even close to Rapino. You know, like, what?
Right.
Yeah, it is. And like, if you have some time, if you haven't already, watch the documentary LFG. I think it was on HBO and you will cry, you know, because it really is. It is hard to comprehend. I mean, we live it, right? As women, we live this every day. We don't unfortunately know anything different, at least yet. And I agree with you. Long story short, I could talk about this for days and hours, but
I think just to bounce off that, like, you know, well, Jen, speaking of being familiar with Rapino, like, Jen, you kind of, you know, Rapino sort of.
Ooh. So, I mean, give like, us the Rapino connection.
Yeah. But truthfully, like, how does that feel like now that you know a lot of these people? And even seeing that documentary, I saw it, and it is pretty like heartbreaking, because what I'm always astonished by is that equality seems like it should be a standard, right? Just men's, women's teams, it's the national team, they should get paid the same. Because of the Title IX thing, all this stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
But the women's team is far more decorated than the men's.
Yeah.
So it's like throughout all of existence. So it's just crazy. It's bananas that, you know, they were getting barely like paid in comparison. And then you have like, you know, in this documentary, you see that women on the team are like, they all have like side jobs. Like they can barely afford to like pay, like to live and stay on the flipping national team, you know.
Well, and they're playing and winning.
World champion, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the U.S. women's national team CBA came, you know, happened right around the same time as NWSL's CBA. So that's our professional women's soccer league here in the United States. And as a whole, the U.S. or the NWSL players as a league are the highest paid of all women's soccer leagues. And yet, you know, base salary is about $36,000.
Wow.
So, you know, the most, so the latest highest paid NWSL player came in with a $2 million contract. That's Mal Swanson, which plays for the Thorns. And it's a huge deal because the one before that was 1.5, and that was December of last year. But, you know, you look at what, say, Lionel Messi's making at $20 million, and it's, you know, like 40 times as much.
Right.
So we are a long, long way from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And though obviously there's a lot of averages in the middle, right? But, mm-hmm. You know, the average women NWSL player makes somewhere around $65,000 a year, which is not really much of a living wage in a big city. Yeah. Men, yeah, MLS makes middling around $450,000 a year. So the big difference.
And you don't want to just like throw some extra money at the problem and make them feel like, wow, now you've won because we're paying you a more livable wage. But meanwhile, it's still like a massive gap.
Yeah,
huge. Yeah, and we should clarify too that this lawsuit was just, this was really purely about the national team, which is federally funded. And so like the NWSL, it's like the private, you know, pro team. But still that decision greatly influenced, you know, how rates are starting to go up. But, you know, bottom line still being there's a huge, you know, inequality in pay and difference.
Yeah. So why don't we start off by putting up on the board undervaluing women.
Yeah, that's, so I think that's number one at the top.
And just to calibrate the podcast, I usually jump in at this phase.
Yes.
And just ask you to articulate in this context of our podcast where we take history's greatest tragedies.
Right.
What is it that we are trying to identify? The what's the tragedy of before the lawsuit settlement and the new CBA agreement?
Yeah. I think the fact that there was such a huge pay disparity to begin with.
Right.
In a situation where these women and this team in particular was the number one in the world.
Right.
So let's put up undervaluing women. This is from CNN. In 2023, they wrote, while Morgan and Rapinoe were the highest paid female soccer players last year, earning $5.7 million each on and off the pitch, their most successful male counterpart, Cristiano Ronaldo, was earning $136 million from both on-field and off-field revenues, Forbes estimated.
Jeez.
But Morgan and Rapinoe's own estimated multi-million dollar earnings are an outlier at even the highest echelons of the sport. This is from AP News. Perhaps the biggest sticking point was World Cup prize money, which is based on how far a team advances in a tournament. While the U.S. women have been successful on the international stage with back-to-back World Cup titles, differences in FIFA prize money meant they took home far less than the men's winners. American women received a $110,000 bonus for winning the 2019 World Cup. The U.S. men would have received $407,000 had they won in 2018. So that's not a good percentage. I'm really bad at math, but that doesn't feel right.
And that was just a result of what the contract that they negotiated? Like, what's the justification for the difference there?
So let's get into the contract, which is the contract that they negotiated. And you please, ladies, jump in because you're definitely more versed in this. The contract they negotiated for what they play here is still different than what they negotiated for the World Cup. And the biggest sticking point was that because FIFA sets the rates for the winners and the rate for the men's is so much higher than for the women's, it's something like the amount of prize money is 100 million versus 400 million for the men's, something like that. Chris is going to get on that. They said that because FIFA is discriminates toward women, their hands were tied.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. In terms of like an actual putting together a lawsuit, I like to act like I'm an attorney. I'm definitely not.
Like it.
I believe what this also the most alarming thing about this whole stupid thing is just how complicated this case is and the arguments of like how it was created and how obvious it seems it should be that it's whatever. But anyway, the basis of the lawsuit, like the wording of it, was using Title IX, which is about the U.S. and how federal funds in the U.S. are used to pay men versus women in sports, right? And federally funded sports, right? So, but with this, they're the ones that the team had to essentially sue or take the case against. But what the argument rounded out being was that it's that FIFA above them, the federation, which is an international federation that pays our U.S. federation, that it's that different. So really they're saying it's FIFA that, you know, really it's FIFA that's like biased and discriminatory and like, you know, it's not the U.S. version of it who's just doing the payout, which all sounds just like a giant ridiculous workaround. So really, we're just internationally discriminatory against women in sports, which I think maybe we knew, but
just do we put FIFA on the board?
FIFA should definitely be on the board.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
They're going to jail.
Yeah,
nice. Put them up.
I mean, we could even put like sexist attitudes around the world,
right?
World sexism.
Yeah.
And then I would I'm just diving in. I would like to blame the origin of like sport battles, which is like the Olympics. Because I read something that made me, well, it was disheartening and terrifying, but it did actually, I also laughed and I was like, I have to read this to Clayton. Hold on, let me find the language.
Chris is one of my childhood friends for all the listeners, just for some context. Yeah. She's like an old friend. We have many memories together.
But it versus like just Chrissy just emailing or texting Clayton, just as if she's a guest. She got Clayton's number somehow.
Sorry.
Hi.
Just to circle back about FIFA.
Oh, yeah.
Unless Chrissy, you're still, unless you found that thing you wanted to.
She found it, but give us the stats.
Okay. So FIFA in 2019, the total prize pool for women in the World Cup was 30 million, with the first place team receiving 4.3 million. The men's, on the other hand, in 2022, first place team received 42 million.
And
so
what was the
whole?
That's
10 million more than the entire budget for the women's in 2020, in 2019.
Wow.
I mean, that seems fair, right?
Yeah.
That
seems- it's just pocket change, really. Come on. What are we
but
fighting
how
about?
Much, how many millions were allotted to all of the teams?
440 million for the Men's World Cup.
Wow.
Yeah.
Versus 30 million.
Versus, well, they upped it in 2023.
That was after
to 110, it seems like.
Okay. So still
that sounds about
way
right.
below. Okay.
From 30. So 2019, women's
huge
prize
jump.
Pool was 30.
Now
2023, they started to sense it. Mm-hmm. We might get in trouble here.
Yeah. but we're not going to really give them.
No,
it's not going
to
be
they
equal.
Upped it to
come
110.
On. Okay.
To 110.
Okay. okay, Chrissy.
This is on like the fun facts, right? Of like for the Olympic Games website. This is like their formal PDF. Okay. The history of it. No women, no slaves, and no foreigners.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That was the criteria.
That was it?
Wow.
It's the three main criteria for participating in the ancient Olympic Games. Athlete had to be male, of Greek origin, and freeborn. That was the language.
Wow.
So it's
I
just,
like
you
that.
Know.
Yeah, it's built into
it's
the
it's a
culture.
Progressive organization is what you're saying. Yeah. Very inclusive.
Yeah.
It was very inclusive.
A little elitist, maybe.
Yeah, I do think that. I mean, you got to think though, like the origins plays a big deal in like the history and how it pans out. Like if that's where you're starting from, that this is like a men's only world, like you're up against a lot from the get-go.
I mean, something that I felt we could put up on the board was the U.S. tradition of gender discrimination. Like we just have a tradition of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is from the New York Times. What we set out to do, Morgan said in a telephone interview, was to have acknowledgement of discrimination from U.S. soccer, and we received that through back pay in the settlement. We set out to have fair and equal treatment and working conditions, and we got that through working conditions settlement. And we set out to have equal pay moving forward for us and the men's team through U.S. soccer, and we achieved that. I feel a lot of pride that there are going to be girls who are going to grow up and see what we've accomplished and recognize their value instead of having to fight to see it themselves. Midge Purse, a member of the Collective Bargaining Committee for the Women's Players Association, said, "But my dad always told me, you don't get a reward for doing what you're supposed to do," she added, "and paying men and women equally is what you're supposed to do." Rapinoe testified, this is from ABC News, Rapinoe testified before Congress on the issue of equal pay, telling lawmakers, "If it can happen to us and it can happen to me with the brightest lights shining on us all times, it can and it does happen to every person who is marginalized by gender." Hmm. What we've learned and what we continue to learn is there's no level of status, there's no accomplishment or power that will protect you from the clutches of inequality, Rapinoe said in her testimony. One cannot simply outperform inequality or be excellent enough to escape discrimination of any kind.
I mean, that's so profound. And I really feel like, too, maybe there's room for this on the board that speaks to this kind of idea of more specifically specific to this case, not just like gender discrimination, but this idea of like female what's the word I'm looking for? Your inferiority,
inferiority.
Like they mm-hmm. don't have the like physical skill or adeptness to do like the sports the way the men do. You know, it's just like kind of this mm-hmm. general idea of like a lack of potential, which I think is like really plagues. I mean, go ahead.
That was formerly part of the Soccer Federation's argument why they wouldn't give.
I mean, it's absurd. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's explain that. So during the lawsuit, what they won the 2019 World Cup, you know, so mm-hmm. it's like they're outperforming. They're just on a winning streak. The Federation comes out and says, you know, we're going to promise to pay, you know, work on this equality thing. You know, we're going to, you know, you guys just you ladies just won. So we're dedicated to fighting for equality. And then they came out with their argument, which pretty much said that men are just better and more popular at sports.
They very specifically said that the job of a USMNT requires a higher level of skill based on speed and strength than does the job of a women's national team player.
Wow.
Meanwhile, let's just comment on the fact that the U.S. men's national team has never won a World Cup, and the U.S. women's national team has won 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what if I called that a false female skill inferiority narrative or something? Is that too wordy? I just want to I want to encapsulate that somehow on the board. This like false idea.
The weak female narrative or the.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
Rebecca just had it right.
He loves it. Yeah, yeah.
It just, no, it's a, it, it worked. No, it sounds Clayton. Much better. Mine was a little wordy. You edited. I appreciate the edit.
They literally put that in court documents. That's just.
Right.
And didn't they back off that very quickly? Is that my understanding that they were like, oh, actually, this doesn't really track?
Well, I would say
backlash was
fight.
Huge.
Yeah, with a lot of fight.
Right,
yeah.
right.
So after that happened, I feel like we need to put the judge up on the board as well.
Okay.
This is Judge Gary Klausner, and he was the one who dismissed the original case.
Okay.
This is from the New York Times. In April 2020, the judge in the women's gender discrimination lawsuit Gary Klausner of the United States District Court for the Central District of California appeared to resolve the case in a single devastating ruling, dismissing the argument that they were systematically underpaid. Klausner ruled the U.S. Soccer had substantiated its claim that the women's team had actually earned more on both a cumulative and an average per game basis than the men's team during the years covered by the lawsuit. This is from Time magazine. Gabe Feldman, a sports law professor at Tulane University, tells Time, "It's not that unusual that the mediation attempt ended unsuccessfully. Many equal pay cases are complicated and are difficult to issue, difficult issues to prove," he said. "In many cases, the fight is over whether the jobs are similar, not over the level of pay. In this case, both questions are difficult. Are the jobs similar and is the pay equal? Are there factors other than gender leading to pay difference? Making a direct comparison between how much the men earned versus the women is difficult because of the different contracts signed by men and women's players and other factors that come into play," according to Feldman. Among other things, players factor in the number of games they play, which tournaments they play in, the popularity of soccer in general, and the money they make outside of soccer through sponsorships or other work to determine what they think is a fair amount to make, he says. So there was a technicality here that occurred, which was that technically the women's team did make more money because they played more and won more than the men's. So so the argument was then, how can you say that there's a disparity? There's a pay disparity if the women are making more money technically than what the men made. But the truth is that the men weren't working as much. Do you know what I mean?
Their rate sucked.
Right.
I mean, the USMNT had a pay for play kind of structure, right? And the USWNT wanted a pay structure that included like annual salaries and maternity and healthcare and childcare benefits and that kind of thing. But the argument was that the U.S. women had agreed to the different pay structure and therefore they had chosen it and they had chosen to get paid less. And so then it was okay. You know, along the way, the judge was getting it wrong. I mean, it's not equal if you have women who are working more hours. You know, let's just say everybody made, both men and women made $100 an hour. You know, something easy, right? But women worked 1,000 hours and men worked 1 hour.
Right.
So, but they both walked away with $100.
Yeah.
Right.
The judge was saying that's equal because you got equal pay. And we're saying we had to work really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
Without breaks, you know, yada, yada, to get to that $100. And they sat around and played, you know, games on TV and worked for 1 hour. So those two things are not actually equal, right?
Absolutely.
That was a very, I'm going to go teach this in elementary school now.
yeah.
But I mean, you know, so there's equal pay.
But not equal, but
equal work.
Yes, that's half of it.
Right. And so that was where, you know, I think for anybody here who was watching the World Cup, the slogan that the US Women's National Team were kind of came up with and then got, you know, rewarded by the rest of us picking it up and waving the flag was equal play, equal pay. Mm-hmm. And so there's two different things, right? So it's not just the dollar, it's how much work goes into the dollar, you know? And then on top of it, it was just the fact that the US Women's National Team was at that time the top group of players in the entire world. And the US Men's Team was wrong.
And to that point, Jen, maybe you can speak on this too. Does like sponsorship play into that? Like where the women, my understanding is that they, even though they are the top team, like they're not getting the huge sponsorship or players are not getting the big sponsorship deals that some of the male players might have benefited from, or correct me if I'm wrong there.
Well, they're kind of two separate things, right? So there's the money that you make as a US Women's National Team player, right? With being a U.S. women's national team player, you're in the upper echelon, you're getting a lot more coverage. So as a player, for your name, image, and likeness kind of side of things, right, you may personally get a sponsorship from Buick or Dove or whatever the company might be. That's where a good portion of athletes' ultimate annual compensation comes from. So a U.S. women's national team player is most certainly also going to be playing for the NWSL. So she's going to have league pay.
Right.
She's going to have U.S. women's national team pay. She's going to have potentially FIFA bonus pay. And then she's going to have sponsorship money. So they're all separate, but collectively that's what's playing into the numbers that we were just talking about.
Right.
Where Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe have their total compensation, right? So there's multiple income sources that are coming into those numbers. And though that does make understanding an athlete's pay a little bit more challenging for people who are just learning about how it all works.
Would you say that on average, the women's team, because they are more successful, benefit more from outside sponsorship? Or is that still a battle or like a hurdle that you feel like women are facing in the sports world?
That women are benefiting more than men from sponsorship?
Yeah.
So no. And there's a lot of data to substantiate this. On average, and this has gone up, and back to what Chrissy was saying about how quickly things are changing right now, we are seeing numbers rise, and they are rising a lot more quickly than they were, you know, even a year or two ago. But the latest numbers that I think came out last year are women. So in the U.S., the sports sponsorship pool of money, right? That that whole world is, I think on last, I can update this, I can give you fact checks, but it was like $88 billion industry.
Right.
Women make less than 1%.
Wow. That is shocking.
Wow.
Yeah. So the answer to your question is no, it's nowhere near equal. And making less than 1%. And that's taking into account tennis and basketball and hockey and, you know, everything, but less than 1% of an $88 billion industry in the U.S. is not equal. So no, they're not making a lot more money.
It's criminal. It seems criminal to me.
It's really not fair.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we have the U.S. Soccer Federation up on the board for very obvious reasons.
Great. Got it.
I also wanted to throw on the board that it's an honor mentality. So this is from CNN. At the beginning of her career, Riley recalled playing in the World Cup was, quote, just for honor rather than something that could prove financial security. Quote, it's not just the increase in prize money, she added, but also the equal conditions in terms of the delegation size and having single rooms. There are things that you would have thought we would have had a long time ago. Now, I feel like for so long, women have been told to just be grateful, you know, to just be grateful that you've come this far. Don't think about how unequal it is. Just be grateful that, you know, it's not as bad as it used to be.
I mean, it's all about, it's not just even about like how much they get, you know, for a paycheck. It's also the conditions for these players. And like, you know, when you're traveling, when you have lodging, your food, all these things, their clothes, like in the 90s, the women's were wearing men's shorts and shirts. They didn't even have like, you know, they weren't tapered, for God's sakes. I know that sounds ridiculous.
No, are you kidding?
Our curves.
Yeah. I feel like I just undid the argument. But anyway.
No way. You know, every guy would be making it fit if his outfit didn't, or his uniform, I said outfit, his uniform didn't fit properly.
Clayton, huge sports fan.
I'm so
here.
Sports. Yeah. My outfit's off.
Yeah, look at that.
Sorry. Go on, Chrissy.
But no, I mean, it's all of that. Like, it's ridiculous. You can watch these old, the videos of the, you know, the videos, the old VHS playback of the 99ers, and like, you know, their outfits are like baggy, for Christ's sake. No. But like, just even, I mean, they talked about it. It's like they genuinely could barely afford to stay on the teams. Like they, I mean, it was like laughable. And yeah, they would share rooms. I think even up until like just the most recent, this lawsuit, like the men were often, most often flying on like chartered private flights, and the men are, or, and the women are flying, you know, coach, like, and they're going international to like, you know, have these epic, epic matches. And, you know, it is kind of bananas. So the conditions are equally important, you know?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think one of the things, so we talk a lot about the equal pay, but the equal conditions, medical care, time off, one of the biggest ones is actually the playing field. So like women athletes didn't have protections around what fields they were playing on. Of course, and a lot of what I'm talking about, there's a lot of interplay between NWSL and USWNT because these players are playing on honestly the same pitches, right? They're playing for all the clubs. So there is interplay between the two. But, you know, playing on converted baseball fields, high school fields, that's not the same as men. And so, and whether that's, it's not about quote unquote nice conditions because you want to play on nice conditions. It is literally your body.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is where people are blowing out knees because they're on a field that is just converted for the afternoon to a soccer field. Right.
But wow.
That is tearing a woman's body apart.
Mm.
Because you can't put them on a pitch that is safe for them and have them play to represent your country at a national level is wrong.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest things that came out of this CBA are playing conditions and the interrelationship between the USWNT and the NWSL's CBA, which came out around the same time, really focuses on healthcare, on better medical care, you know, doctors being high quality instead of who they could get to volunteer. You know, these are really, really important. And we still have a long way to go, but it's so much better than where it used to be.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do we go ahead.
Put the NWSL up on the board?
No. Not in this, because the NWSL isn't really responsible for, because the focus of this is U.S. soccer's, the U.S. women's national team. I think NWSL has all kinds of its own issues. It is working, I think, in the proper direction to rectify them now, but I don't, it doesn't seem like, to me, I wouldn't necessarily put them up on the board.
Okay. I have two questions that are part of that. Go ahead, Rebecca.
No, I just wanted to not forget to put one thing, but you go first.
Well, this is about things on the board. So maybe I have a question about leadership. Is there any like higher up leadership that we should be thinking about that is like not helping? And the second is, do we blame media or a lack of media coverage for the popularity of women's sports?
That's what I would like to do.
I mean, what are your thoughts, Chrissy? Because I can talk ad nauseum about this, but
I think like the most basic phrasing of this is like how literally ever since the Olympics, the framing, the idea, the controlled perception, the manipulation around this, that like women's sports don't have value, which I think we were kind of just saying in general about women in general. Mm-hmm. But with this, it's like there's this idea that, and there, you'll see the shirts now that are going around that said that everyone watches women's sports. But the idea has always been that there's no value.
She's got the shirt on.
Sports.
I love it.
Jen turned around. She's wearing it.
She's wearing a hoodie with that phrase.
Jen's ready.
Everyone watches women's sports.
That's the point, is that if it's what's happening right now is this, like, if you build it, they will come thing is happening where like when you put it on the big platform, everyone's showing up. Like like the NCAA game that was on yesterday and on Friday, they both just broke records for the most watched basketball game, men or women, college or pro, on ESPN. Like,
wow.
It's, they're disproving this theory or this myth and perception for so long that like no one want to watch women play. And And I think it's just kind of, it's kind of that simple maybe. And then from there, now that they're saying like, oh no, people are watching, now you get more sponsorships, ad dollars flowing in, you see them going to the bigger platforms. But for Jen, can elaborate on how it's been controlled, like the licensing rights to these games and these events have been controlled. And then they literally just suffocate and like black out, not show women's sports on like any major networks or like at all. And you wind up being trapped, like all the different sport leagues.
So the networks are like the gatekeepers, or the executives of the networks are like just keeping these teams out or away from the coverage.
Yeah. And here's a really good example. And Christy, you're right. So ESPN, and I can pull some of the numbers if helpful, but ESPN has owned the rights to playing NCAA March Madness for a very long time. Mm-hmm. They only played men's March Madness like 5 years ago. Many of the women's games weren't even filmed. And wow. I think only a couple games were actually shown, like the maybe the Final Four and the championship. And I can, you know, go back and look. Regardless, it's not dissimilar. And they were shown on secondary platforms or tertiary platforms. So nobody watched them because they didn't know they were there. And that you've got the compounding effect of, you know, when streaming platforms came out, they were kind of throwing women's sports on there because nobody watched women's sports. And so you can hide it there, which then created yet another barrier to accessing watching women's sports, because most people can't afford to have all the various streaming platforms memberships, right? And so, or subscriptions rather. So there's, you know, there's a lot of issues, but the number one thing we see when you look at the top of the pyramid for what's wrong here is that media outlets have the ownership rights to play or show sports, and they made a choice to not program women's sports. They categorically have lost billions and billions of dollars because they didn't show women's sports. This year, I don't know if you guys know this, but the March Madness trademark, women's NCAA March Madness, was only allowed to use that 2 years ago. So this time around and last time around, 2023 and 2024, the first time that NCAA D1 women's basketball was allowed to use the March Madness actual logo. And it has completely shifted. Sponsorship dollars, you know, are just pouring in. It's, and like Christy said, the games over the last, of the Elite Eight and the finals, the Final Four and the championship, have brought in more money and more viewership for ESPN than any sport, than the NHL, the NFL, the NBA, like anything. And everybody's like, oh. And the problem is that most programming decisions for linear cable and streaming are made by a handful of older white men.
Yes.
And
like five or six control all the sports media that's going out. Mm-hmm. So until we change who's making these decisions, and until we change who is at the top, right? And that has to be more reflective of our entire society. And the athletes who are playing the games, right? So yes. The fan base is not being reflected by the people making the decisions of what to feed us. And so that's the major problem.
I 100% agree with you. I feel like we have to put up on the board lack of women up top.
Yep. This is at the executive level.
Yes.
Yes.
This is from CNN. Even today, most decision makers in soccer continue to be men. UEFA's executive committee has 20 members, 19 of whom are men, while FIFA's council has 37 members, 30 of whom are all men. All but one of those women sitting on those decision-making bodies fill quota seats specifically reserved for women. Nearly three quarters, 74% of head coaches across all women's soccer leagues are still male, with no women at all in top positions in Germany, Iceland, Netherlands, and Norway, according to the 2022 FIFA benchmarking report.
Right. And in particular media as well, to Jen's point.
Yeah.
And should we just put up ESPN on the board? Like, yeah, I mean, just in general, the worldwide leader in sports. What do you think?
I mean, Jen? I think I wouldn't put ESPN. I would say media, because I would say sports media, because actually ESPN has become one of the better ones. They're doing a lot on programming for women. It's, you know, it's prime time, but like we all know, right? Who owns the company to begin with? You know, there's just a couple of conglomerates. And so then all of these lines spill out. So I would go higher up, right? You need to go to the top.
This so is Disney.
The Disney. The Disney.
Disney, yeah.
It's Turner Broadcasting. Right. It's Turner. It's Disney. It's, you know, it's the top top. So whoever those are, let's just say the top top.
What,
cover it.
What that's makes me angry about this, or what worries me about this, is that, you know, it's my fear is that all this new money is coming in and enriching the men who spent so many years burying it, and not enriching the women who had to like fight and should be in some of these higher levels. Like, you know, it's kind of akin to like the whole marijuana debate, where it's like you spent so many years throwing people of color in jail for like possession, and now it's in vogue and popular in many states, and so a bunch of white business owners with a lot of money and capital are sweeping in and making all this money off of selling weed. It's like, you want the people who have like fought for this to be sharing in some of the rewards of that. So I just hope that it continues to kind of evolve, to Jen's point, like in the upper level. So the people who are like fighting the fight are actually seeing the reward.
Right. And I think this kind of goes back to the bad trope of you should be so lucky and you know, be happy with where you're at and don't worry about the fact that it's not equal. Well, we are all worried about the fact that it's not equal, but nothing's going to shift in, like, you know, overnight. So what is shifting is that by proving with data that women's sports fans exist, and that women's sports is gloriously fun and exciting to watch, and these are top-notch athletes, we are getting more time on TV, which means we're getting more sponsorship and advertising dollars, which is then elevating the players, and the dollars and the impressions on social media and digital landscapes are increasing. All of those things are going to increase sponsorship dollars for the women, and ultimately, you know, that is increasing pay. So it is a complex, you know, narrative for sure. But I think this is a huge, huge step in the right direction.
Just having the data, just having it in the first
place.
Yeah.
Being able to collect it. Because that's how narratives are withheld from groups, right?
Yeah.
You don't even allow them to. Yeah. So now that we do, and we're beginning to get it, we can now prove that, look, you know, why is nobody paying attention here? Hello.
Here's a really cool list, and I think this is worth just repeating. It's not about U.S. soccer, but at this point, I think any fan of women's sports is like just a fan of women athletes and women's sports, and it's all integrated because we're all helping lift up the industry sector together. So this was the Iowa LSU NCAA Women's March Madness game. So it would have been the Elite Eight. It averaged 12.3 million viewers, which is more than every women's college basketball game ever. Again,
wow,
because they weren't being played. But every ESPN college basketball game ever, regardless of gender, every MLB game, every NHL game, every MLS game, every NBA game, and every CFB regular season game. So, except for one. But that's insane. And that was the Elite Eight. So we haven't even seen the numbers from the championship. We know they're going to blow everything out of the water. The Final Four was at its height around 17 million viewers.
Wow.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to kind of like bring this back a little bit too, to like the larger culture of women's pro sports just at large, and like seeing value in it. Like,
yeah.
Even this is just like trying to prove that people are watching the game, if you air it, put it somewhere. But also, you know, to bring it back to Jen, like they're seeing a surge in how people are, they're going to pubs, they're going to bars, they're going to the stadiums. There's a whole fan base and culture with this that's showing up. And, you know, everywhere people are starting to see, meaning like advertisers and those who make these right. big decisions,
they can make
are
money.
Seeing that there's like, yeah, and there's people there and they want to do this. And yeah. like, you know, but it's good that there's honestly places like Jen's Pub where I went there thinking I would have no problem getting in to watch the one of the women's soccer games last year. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Standing room only.
No, I couldn't get in.
Amazing. I love that. I mean, that's fantastic.
She, yeah. And by the way, Jen was gone at the tournament this weekend and I was at her pub. and like every game, there was a sign on the door that said, sorry, we're full. Like, and wow. that was literally within 10 minutes of her yeah. pub opening.
Wow.
They were at max capacity. And this yeah. is not to like advertise Jen's pub. I'm just simply saying people want this like stuff. There's
right.
yeah.
And there's more of these types of pubs, you know, showing up.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of US Women's National Team game last year for all the US Women's National Team games for the World Cup. I mean, I wish that I could track it all. It's easily somewhere around 3,000 or 4,000 people that we turned away just because 255 people isn't enough room for all of the fans of women's sports, right?
Thank you for following your fire precaution laws and not overcrowding your yes. bar as the Alarmist podcast. We appreciate that.
I'm well aware of my occupancy status. Yeah. There's a joke that goes around because on the really big games, I go around with my clicker and everybody's like, ooh, that clicker's out.
Oh, I respect you and your clicker so much. Well, okay. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We have to take a break here and start knocking things off the board.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Chris, hit us with the board.
Okay, who's to blame for the U.S. women's soccer pay disparity? Is it undervaluing women, FIFA, world sexism, sport battle or origins, U.S. tradition of gender discrimination, weak female in quotes narrative, Judge Gary Klausner, the U.S. Soccer Federation, quote, it's an honor mentality, unfair collective bargaining agreement, media, or the lack of coverage for women's sports, lack of women at the executive level, or sports media?
What a board. We have no jokes this time.
No. Yeah, sometimes we have silly ones, but all of these feel like real options.
Should we put...
I mean, do we have to knock them off?
Yes, we...
That's our job.
Jen, this is the hard, job we do here every week.
Yeah, and again, it's like we want to...
We can fold them into one another.
But it's true, yeah. Everything kind of gets folded in and encapsulated, but like it's really like who or what is kind of like the overarching reason behind this.
Yeah. Lack of women... Okay, go on. What do you think?
I would say the first thing I would fold into just like the maybe like discrimination and sexism is that it's an honor mentality, because I feel like while it's strong, I don't feel like that's like what got us into this entirely.
Yeah, let's fold that in.
I mean, undervaluing women is the problem.
Yeah.
Right? Undervaluing women across all of these elements is the problem. But I don't think that we can blame a single entity for undervaluing women. This is a societal issue. So yeah. Is it a cause? Yes. Is it the person that we're going to put in jail? I'm not sure. Cause I think that's a much broader conversation.
Yeah. I mean, so, it could be folded into, if you want to lean towards the specificity, which we love, we could always fold undervaluing women into like the way that plays out.
World sexism.
Weak
female narrative. It's an honor mentality. Those four kind of go together, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. And we can also put the U.S. tradition of gender discrimination under that.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep world sexism. What are we going to keep?
Oh, yeah. Which one?
Play? I think we keep just sexism.
Just
world sexism world, is fine.
Okay, great. What about Judge Gary Klausner? I feel like he's like a, you know, he's a symptom of all of this. Like his... Like he's not to blame. He's just the judge who dismissed the initial case.
But like, I think that was a huge oversight.
Oh,
To say that there was equality there because they made more technically without seeing the amount of work, just like Jen explained to us, like the $100.
Right.
You know,
but this problem existed before it was even before his eyes. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like it could have been any judge.
I see. Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
Yeah, he's definitely not helping the problem.
No, he's a part of it. He's a part of the systemic, you know, sexism. Yeah.
Right. I mean, he wasn't there when the pay disparity began in the first place. Mm-hmm. Did the decision to, and realistically, the lawyers who were involved and the complaints that were drafted. There's a lot of elements, I think, that lead to that decision, but.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got
the collective bargaining agreement. I feel like that can fold into the U.S. Soccer Federation, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
They're the ones who made the agreement.
What about sports media versus media or lack of coverage? One of those can fold into the other. Do we fold media and lack of sports coverage into sports media or vice versa? Okay.
Yeah. I like that. How about FIFA? I mean, they're notoriously pretty terrible here.
Right. I think it's, this is an interesting, and so maybe this is where a couple people go to jail or a couple entities go to jail, because FIFA is its own entity. U.S. soccer is its own entity. Those two work in conjunction with one another, but are not necessarily, as we saw, you could reach a point of equal pay between the USMNT and the USWNT. What they couldn't influence is the FIFA bonusing, right? So to me, those two things are separate. And, you know, FIFA is pledging to hopefully get to equal pay by 2026 and 2027. I think all of us will be surprised if it actually happens, but they are two different entities in my mind.
So then we'll keep them separate for now. I feel like the sports battle origins can fold into world sexism.
Yeah, I was thinking the same.
Which then leaves us, we have to figure out who we're sending to jail and who we're slapping here. And you're right, we could equally send the U.S. Soccer Federation and FIFA to the alarmist jail. But what we've got left on the board is FIFA, world sexism, U.S. Soccer Federation, lack of women at the executive level, and sports media.
Do we fold lack of women into sports media as well?
At the executive level?
It's not just, I mean, it's also lack of media or lack of women at the executive level at U.S. soccer, all the coaches, media. Yeah. But that's not the cause.
I agree. I agree.
I feel like, do we slap? Okay. Okay, but because we're this is where it gets hard, because we are discussing the women's soccer team pay disparity.
Right.
If that's the case, then I do think we send the U.S. Soccer Federation and FIFA to the alarmist jail, and we slap world sexism. Although I don't know if I can sleep at night letting sports media off the hook for this one.
Well, right, because if sports media had not made the choice to actively suppress viewership and playtime of women athletes, the world would be like, ooh, we love watching women's sports. What do you mean you're not playing women's sports? Oh, you're not supporting the best team in the world? I mean, like, it's a really, really significant component, and probably the one of the most significant components of why women athletes are not paid equally, whether it's base pay, bonus, or sponsorship dollars.
Yeah, visibility is so important. Yeah. And I feel like you can fold the world sexism into sports media for sure, which is influencing their choice.
Well, based off what you said, Jen, do we send sports media to the alarmist jail and slap FIFA and U.S. Soccer Federation?
Would be.
Oh, that's have you ever put three in jail?
No. Jen is on a mission.
Damn, Jen.
I like that.
She's cracking the whip here. I love
We're not opposed. We're not opposed.
But then we don't have any slaps. That would be a first.
And we can have no slap.
Well, but we could absolutely pull one of the other ones back out that we folded in and slap them.
Right. There's plenty of slapping that could go around. We can do that. We can do that. And I mean, for good old time's sake, we can just slap world sexism while we're at it, you know?
Great. True. We could.
The backhand.
All right.
Well,
so
undervaluing women is world sexism. It's because of world sexism, right? So I think those. Yeah. So, okay. So FIFA, U.S. Soccer Federation, and sports media. Are we setting a record here for women?
Yes, that's what we do.
We're going to need to expand our prison facility for sure.
Yeah.
Going to need more accommodations.
Okay, I'm going to call it. I have to call it. World sexism, you're getting the big slap. FIFA, the U.S. Soccer Federation. Sports media, you're going to the alarmist jail. And ladies, there you have it. We couldn't have done this without you. Chrissy, Jen, I mean, it was like having experts on. It was like cheating on one of these episodes.
No, this was fun.
Thank you so much. This was really fun. You made an ugly topic really enjoyable.
In the aftermath, the new agreement, which runs through 2028, will also ensure that players on the women's and men's teams be paid identical appearance fees and game bonuses and receive additional benefits to provide childcare and parental leave. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast and on Twitter @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Ramree Island Crocodile Massacre. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.